everybody. Well, thank you for being here this afternoon. I appreciate having an audience here. I was expecting maybe like three people, but it's nice to see a crowd. So I'm here on behalf of some other colleagues that I worked with and we were all students at the time that this project was completed. So I was a graduate student in the Department of Communication at UC Santa Barbara, and my co-authors were another doctoral student and actually two undergrads. So we undertook this study as all students, but we had great support from our department. So I have no financial disclosures. I wish I did, but I don't. So today's presentation, I just want to kind of go over, you know, what you're going to see. So I'm going to give you a bit of a background of our research team, because I think this really plays a role in why we designed the project the way that we did. Then I'll give an overview of the project, show you some literature review, things that I've done and seen some gaps in the literature in media literacy interventions specifically, and in nutrition education interventions. Then I'll talk a little bit about our intervention development and then move into the pilot tests that we actually did, the methods we used, share some results with you, and then the discussion and implications for future interventions and health promotion practice. So the research team, so, you know, myself and Kim Walsh were PhD students in a communication department, and we're both specifically interested in this concept of media literacy. And I'll move into another slide later where we talk about what does media literacy mean, but, you know, in general, media literacy, we come from a media effects background. So we are in a communication department that's trying to study, well, when people are exposed to all these media messages all the time, how does that affect our attitudes, beliefs, our cognitions, the way we think about products, the way we understand the world? So that's kind of the worldview we come from as communication scholars. So prior to going to get my degree in communication, I also got an MPH in health promotion, and specifically, you know, program design, program evaluation. So really, for me, this was like my little project where I could merge all of my interests together. And then we had two very motivated undergraduate students who just wanted to learn how to do research, so we were able to involve them in this team. So what we really did was we designed what I like to call a food package literacy intervention to help participants become more aware and knowledgeable and skilled in actually analyzing food packages. And when I say analysis of food packages, I'm not just saying can they read the nutrition facts panel and identify how many calories. What I'm actually talking about is more the front of the package. There's advertising features on the front, graphics, health claims, natural, organic, less fat. What do all of those things mean? So that's really the part of it that I'm much more fascinated by. And we actually use a theory of media literacy from the communication side of things to inform, well, what kinds of lessons should we design in order to make this a media literacy intervention? What part of it, you know, is going to build this media literacy? And I know I haven't defined that for you yet, but we'll get there. So the theory of media literacy that we use is not necessarily a behavior change theory, but it's a theory about how people process information and what bits of information people need, what kinds of knowledge they need to then be more critical about the messages that they're seeing in the media. So let's do a brief literature review. So I work in the world of nutrition education. As many of you probably know, if you're familiar with this literature, that there are lots of different kinds of interventions with children, adults, specific subgroups, people with diabetes, African Americans, and there's all kinds of different lessons. However, I think, you know, in my take on the literature, a lot of the lessons focus on, here are the five food groups. Here's how you read the nutrition facts panel. Here's the portion size you should eat. Here's the recommended daily values and how you get that from the nutrition facts panel. But what about the front of the package? What does low fat mean? What does natural mean? You know, because in my work in tradition, what I want to call traditional nutrition education programming, you know, we would get participants coming back and saying, oh, you told me to eat more fiber. So I went and bought this product because on the front it says lots of fiber, or, you know, contains fiber, but then there's all these other things that aren't the healthiest for them. So I started, it kind of tipped me, like, there's all these other kind of cultural things going on the front of a package where all this traditional nutrition education is not really taking into account. So then I also looked into some literature about the front of package features that are on food packages. So, you know, a lot of the research says that packages and labels convey all kinds of information to consumers. They're part of the information set that consumers use to make their purchasing decisions. So, you know, there's different graphics and different types of things like that. And consumers are largely unaware of the types of regulations for package content and what types of health claims can be made for products. You know, when it says, you know, will lower your cholesterol, like who's regulating all that kind of stuff? Most of your consumers don't understand that just because it got printed, it doesn't mean that the FDA went through it, thank you, and vetted it. You know, and it doesn't mean that the Federal Trade Commission looked over it. So I think people are largely unaware of, well, what can you actually put on the front of a package? And I think, you know, in some of the literature, a lot of food manufacturers use all kinds of strategies to try to get consumers to think that a product can be healthy. There's graphics, there's slogans, there's phrases, health claims, and not all of these are regulated. So then, you know, the other body of literature that I really drew from was media literacy interventions. So, you know, there's quite a few intervention studies, I think 52 to be exact, that have used, you know, media literacy as a strategy to try to intervene. And specifically with food and nutrition, there was one study where it was aimed at Head Start parents, and they were trying to get the parents to kind of, when the students or when their children were requesting advertised foods, you know, teach the parents kind of skills and strategies to say, well, here's why that food isn't good for you, because in advertising they're kind of telling you things that aren't true about the product. There was another intervention where fourth and fifth graders were taught to design campaigns to promote fruit and vegetable consumption that they were supposed to design for their home environment. So, you know, they create these posters and then they went home and kind of, you know, had the campaign at their house for their parents and their siblings and things like that. However, you know, the main trend, and these were the only two studies that have done media literacy in like kind of a food or nutrition context, but the general consensus about these media literacy interventions is that there's no clear pattern of what kinds of treatments work, because just even in these two studies, the way that people thought about media literacy and how they translated that into lessons was completely different. One was, oh, this is how you talk to your kids about advertised foods, and another one was about, well, media literacy is knowing how to produce campaigns yourself. So there's a lot of kind of wishy-washy, well, what is media literacy? How do we translate that into a lesson, and how would we actually measure that? So, given the gaps in the nutrition education literature on educating people about the front of food packages, I thought that we should really integrate these media literacy concepts, which is to be more critical about these messages, with nutrition education. However, there is a need to better understand this media literacy process. So, theoretically speaking, what is media literacy and what are we talking about? And that's where, you know, this study really makes a contribution, is that I'm coming to the nutrition education world, the media literacy world, and saying, if you're going to do this kind of work, you really have to be clear on what media literacy is. So I used a theory, it's Potter's cognitive model of media literacy, which is an information processing model of media literacy that actually describes what cognitive components a person has to have in order to increase their media literacy. So this is the model. It's somewhat complicated. I won't go into it. He wrote like a 400-page book on all the different features of it. But pretty much it's saying that, you know, you need to have knowledge, which is down here on the bottom. So knowledge about certain types of things. You should know about how the media affect you psychologically. You should understand how media content operates, what kind of content exists in the media environment. The media industries, how they operate, who owns them, you know, whose messages are being propagated in the media. You need to know real-world facts, too, and you need to understand yourself. These then motivate or linked to your motivation to understand all of these things. And then you need to have a certain set of competencies and skills that will allow you to then put all these things together when you're being exposed to the media message, that then you can be either more media literate or not. So it's very complex, but, you know, I think the main underlying idea is that all of this happens subconsciously. So this model really borrows a lot from, you know, kind of new theories in psychology where we're not conscious of all of our behaviors. Everything's kind of automatically associated. So we're making shortcuts all the time. It's that thing where it's like, I take the same route to work every day, but I totally don't remember how I got there, but somehow I made it to work safely because we've done that so many times that our minds just automatically do it. So this model argues that the same thing happens when we're exposing ourselves to media messages, and I would argue to advertising and to food packages, any kind of routine that we're engaged in. Every time I go to the grocery store, I pretty much buy the same things, so I'm not putting that much thought into what I'm buying. So, We basically borrowed this model and mostly focused on the five knowledge structures because it's a giant model, and two of the skills. So with the knowledge structures, you know, we focused on media industries, media content, media effects, the real world and the self. So in terms of the food industry, we had lessons on regulations about health claims. How can you label your food as organic? What are the different levels that you can label that? The content of food packaging. So what are the different parts of a food package? And then also, what are the effects of this exposure? So we actually taught our participants that you're processing all of this automatically. Like, that was the lesson on the media effects part. So in addition to increasing participants' knowledge in these areas, we also wanted to really strengthen their skills of analysis and evaluation. So the way analysis, and it's actually defined in this model, is that it's breaking down, you know, the different elements of a package and comparing, but we wanted our participants to compare the actual front of package advertising elements and cross-reference them with the ingredient list. And this all plays back to the automatic processing of things. So if there's graphics on the front of package, let's say there's like an orange there, and if you believe, if you buy into that theory that we're automatically processing all these things, I'm probably going to okay, orange, that's healthy, vitamin C. I'm not even aware that I already processed all of that. So basically, we're trying to get our participants to say, okay, well, if I see an orange, I'm going to be more conscious of that, and then I'm actually going to look in the ingredient list to see if an orange somewhere appears on the ingredient list. And then we had them brush up on the skill of evaluation. So how can you judge if a product is actually healthy or not? What are the standards that you should judge by? And here are all the elements, you know, based on all these knowledge things that we're brushing up on that you can use to evaluate whether the product is healthy. So we, you know, kind of mapped on the different things that we included in our intervention onto these constructs, you know, from the model. And then these are the measures that we used. So in our first session, we gave information, you know, that's required by the FDA. So that's the nutrition facts panel and the ingredients list. So those are only two pieces of information on a food package that are required by the FDA. Then we went over meanings of commonly written phrases commonly written on packaging. So, you know, health claims, and those can include, you know, things like lowers your cholesterol. But, you know, what are the standards when you conclude that or not? And then what kinds of standards you have to meet to have the different kinds of organic labeling. So there's USDA organic, organic ingredients, things like that. Then we had a lesson on interpreting label lingo. So this is the kind of stuff that's like reduce sugar, 5% less fat, you know, like no trans fat. Like, what does all of that actually mean? Then we went over nutrient content claims and structure function claims. So if you've ever been into this body of literature, it's very complicated. And the different rules that apply to each kind, you know, of these types of claims is different. So, you know, it's kind of a big, complicated mess. But the bottom line is no one knows that it's not regulated. And so pretty much packages can put this or companies can put this on their package. And unless someone sues them, nothing really happens. And then, you know, talking a little bit about the organic movement and the organic certification process and, you know, all the different requirements behind that. Then we had a second session, so we reviewed, you know, front of package claims, and then we looked at what I call unregulated front of package elements. So these mostly are graphics and the word natural. So the word natural is actually not regulated by anyone, not the Federal Trade Commission or the FDA. You can pretty much put natural on anything, and until someone sues you, you can just have it on your package. So there's actually several court cases going on right now with, I think, a chicken, it's like a chicken manufacturer because they put all natural chicken, but someone's like, actually, I investigated your processes and it's not natural, so you can't put it on. So the case just gets, you know, thrown back and forth. Then we also talked about information processing. So how does your mind work? How is it processing all of these things automatically? And then we really highlighted a case study that really draws all of these things together. And this case study was actually really the impetus for why I started looking into this area. So Gerber, which is a baby food product, you know, got sued because they had these fruit snacks. And on the front of the package was like all these great tropical fruits because it was this tropical flavored fruit snack. They got sued by some consumers in California who said this is false advertising because when I look at the ingredient list, the only fruit ingredient you have is what grape juice. And you don't have guavas and papayas, but you have all these pictures of guavas and papayas on the front. So anyway, needless to say, this is still stuck in the court. But, you know, there was no research that they drew on to say, well, would your average consumer believe that there's guavas in fruits. Is that something an average consumer would think? But given what we know about all the automatic processing, yeah, they would. But instead of doing the research on that side, I'm a doer, so I went straight for the intervention. So, you know, that moves us into our pilot test. So this was a very small sample. I was an undergrad, I didn't have resources. So this is a pre-post single sample mixed method design. So it was 18 college-aged females from a sorority. So our undergrad student who worked on our team was a part of that sorority. They all agreed to participate in the study by attending two workshops and completing a pre-test and a post-test. Their average age was 18.6. They were mostly freshmen in college, and 85% of them reported that it was really important for them to eat healthy. So we got approval, we recruited them, you know, through leadership of the sorority emails, social media page posts, asked those who were interested to show up. So we had two workshops, they were 1 week apart. Session one, they filled out the pretest, we presented lesson one, then the second session, we presented lesson two, and then they filled out the post-test. So these were kind of the things that we measured to see if our product or our program actually worked. So we had knowledge items. So this pertains to the different knowledge structures from the model. And then we actually also had them do a package analysis. So we showed them an example package and wanted to see qualitatively if they would pull out certain things and, you know, compare what they saw on the front to the actual ingredient list, which is our skills that we're interested in. And then we also threw in this self-perception of nutrition literacy knowledge and skills, because I think based on my work in a lot of nutrition education, I think people think they know how to eat healthy, but then when I start telling them all of these things, they're like, man, I actually didn't really know anything about this. So we actually took measures, like what was your self-assessment of your nutrition knowledge before the intervention, after the intervention, and then we had them go back and reassess, well, now that you know what you know, what do you think your knowledge was before you were exposed to all of this? So this is what the sample package looked like. This is actually a product that's on the market. So it contains all the features that we cover. It's organic. It has pictures of fruits and vegetables. So we showed them the ingredient list and the nutrition facts panel. And this was what we asked them. And it was just open-ended, and they could free fill out, you know, as long as they wanted, tell us whatever they thought. So here are our results. So at pretest, their knowledge, it was a mean score of 15, and then it increased to about 19. So that's a gain of 4 points. And when we did a t-test to compare the two means pre and post, that was significant, but this is a very small sample, so I don't really know if I could really report those t-tests. And then we also investigated the subscales for each type of knowledge, and those also all showed a gain. The interesting thing about this self-perception of nutrition literacy knowledge is that, so from pre to post-test, their self-assessment of their knowledge and abilities increase. So at the beginning, you know, I say, oh, what do you think your nutrition literacy is? You know, they said 8 or 5. And then at post-test, they said 8. But then when we ask them, okay, so now that you know everything, what do you think about your knowledge before all of this happened, before you came to our two lessons? And those decreased significantly. So here are the tables. So you can see the pretest mean. Here, I'll use my little cursor here. This column. This is the post-test mean, so this is between pre and post, the difference. And then this is the pretest and their own reassessment. So you can see that they thought they were around a 6 at all of these different, you know, how would you rate your knowledge about nutrition? How would you rate your abilities to select healthy food? But they all dropped. They're like, wow, now that you shared all of this information with me, I actually didn't know as much as I thought I did. And I think that's very interesting because we're assuming that everybody has the same definition of what it means to have nutrition knowledge. But obviously, when you're designing the curriculum, your idea of what nutrition knowledge is probably different than someone who doesn't, this is not their career. So I think this is an interesting item to include, and I want to include it in any future studies that I do. So in terms of the open-ended package analysis, we did a qualitative analysis of how they analyzed the package before the intervention and compared those to the results of after the intervention. So we did, you know, kind of like a thematic analysis, you know, what kinds of things were people mentioning. So the most interesting thing from this was that in the pretest responses, they mostly pulled like their, you know, I think this product's healthy because it says vitamin C on it, or it says, you know, made with 100% fruit juice. But then in this, the post-test, they were more likely to measure or mention the features that are regulated by the FDA. So it was more like the nutrition facts panel says this. And in the ingredient list, I didn't see any high fructose corn syrup. So I think we saw a change in where they were looking for information to assess whether the product was healthy or not, which was our goal because we're saying, well, the front of the package, which is what you're using to make shortcut sorts of decisions when you're trying to get to the grocery store in 5 minutes, that's not good. You need to actually look and pay attention to the two pieces of information that are actually regulated. So we're really happy with this, but again, this is a small sample and you know the data set wasn't as rich as we would like, so I think we're going to definitely kind of try to tweak the prompt or something so we could get more data. So, you know, in sum, I think that nutrition literacy and specifically focusing on package literacy, it's a feasible and promising approach to helping people make more healthy food choices. Because again, I think when you're just saying, oh, do you know how to eat healthy? Someone's perception of what that means is slightly different. And traditional nutrition education doesn't include sort of these package literacy elements. But that's what people are using. They're exposed to advertisements. I mean, I don't know, what's that Kaiser Family Foundation? It's like kids are exposed to thousands of advertisements a day. So if we're not including that as part of their education in terms of how to select healthy food, are we actually, you know, doing something that's actually effective? Because I think we need to start incorporating that. That's a very real life experience, being exposed to ads. So maybe we should teach people how to break down the ads and choose healthier products. And again, you know, when people are shopping for foods, they might not be paying attention to all of this. And there's lots of, you know, work in psychology and in psychological theory testing that's, we do this. We are processing things automatically. And if we're not, you know, we make people more aware of that, that that's what's actually happening, will that then kind of increase their mindfulness about shopping for food? And given, you know, all the knowledge that they would then have from an intervention like this, would that then actually make an impact on the kinds of foods that they choose? So in terms of implications for practice, I would argue if practitioners are interested in designing a media literacy intervention, they should select a theory, like actual follow a theory of media literacy, because that's what's going to guide, well, what makes this a media literacy intervention? And I think, you know, we use this individual information processing model, but there are other models of media literacy. So it doesn't have to be this model, but just use some sort of guiding framework so that you have some idea, well, what is media literacy? And then in public health, you know, practitioners, I think practitioners working in nutrition education should definitely consider including lessons in curricula on package features found on the front of packages and not just focusing on nutrition facts panel. How do you read this? How do you determine how many calories are in one serving? What if you eat the whole package? That's what most of it's focused on now. But again, as I would argue, there's a lot of advertising features on the front that are really getting, you know, people think they're eating healthy, but they might not be because these cues are purposefully put there to make people think that the products are healthy. So I thank you all for staying late for this session, and if you have any questions or are interested in this kind of work, please feel free to email me. Thank you.